You're listening to the New Old Heads podcast, shot live every Tuesday at twitch.tv/newoldheads and released every Thursday at noon via bringingdowntheband.com. The show is brought to you by Coleman Dental, Printfinity, Indie CD and Vinyl. Support the show directly by becoming a member at patreon.com/newoldheads.
You are now tuned in to the New Old Heads podcast. I am Major 7. Three-fourths of the crew is in the building. Shout out to my man DJ J Div. Had to take care of some business, but he will be off this week. My man Jay Moore is locked and loaded. How are you, sir?
Doing well, doing well. It was fun to listen to the show last week without me on it. So I'm not distracted and trying to critique my own performance, and I just got to listen and enjoy for the first time in a long time.
Isn't that fun?
And it is. But the wild thing is, this was a week where I probably would have went off on different.
It sure was.
But I was like, you know what? Maybe it's for the best that I wasn't there.
Yeah, some of the stuff we did last week was definitely teed up for you.
So, yeah, but that's happened before. Like a couple years ago, when I was out for the Take That Tuesday anniversary. Shout out to everyone who
yes.
made it to coaches for that. Yeah. It was the week after Will Smith slapping Chris Rock.
Oh.
And you know, if any time I get to talk bad about Jada Pinkett.
I'm
ready to go, baby.
Locked and loaded.
But this show was great last week. It was fun to listen as a listener.
Shout out to Brother to the Night for stepping up and filling your spot. He always does a good job with that, so we really appreciate him. My man Lone is in the building. How are you, sir?
Doing all right, man. Thanks for asking.
Hey, man. That's what I'm here for.
Doing all right today?
Man. Yeah. doing okay.
Okay. Well, good.
All right.
And I hate to kind of sadden us out, but I do have to acknowledge somebody who was a supporter of the show. I hate to say was because, my man Chris Flood, unfortunately, he passed away.
Really?
What?
You might have known him in our community through the chat as the Flood.
What?
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
So
I did not know that.
Of course, I would have talked about it last week, but it's been a couple of weeks.
Damn, man.
And it's just kind of crazy. You know, when I went to his service on this past Saturday, and you see somebody, and it's like, oh gosh, he was a year younger than me.
We just saw him. He came out to
bro,
our.
Bro, he just to the, came out to our event.
Came to a podcast meetup. Yeah. You know, apparently because it was cancer. Apparently, you know, he just didn't want to. You know, like I said, not trying to sadden things out, but you know, this is somebody that. Even before the podcast, and despite us being co-workers, was a friend. You know, because we're on that same wavelength of, video games and hip hop and comic books and all that sort of thing.
I was just wondering. I was like, man, I haven't seen the Flood in a minute.
The Flood used to be with us during COVID.
During COVID.
When we were doing Zoom, he'd still be in the chat and still rocking with us, man.
Yeah. So
wow, man. Rest in peace to the Flood,
Chris
bro.
Chris Flood, man.
Chris Flood,
that's a good dude right there.
He was, because. When I was a nobody at WFYI, just one of the callers, it was, because there are people who if you just one of the peons, if you will, they don't speak to you.
Yeah.
Because I remember there's one cat that until I became one of those people with an office, never said one word to me. All of a sudden I had an office and he's like, oh, he wants to be buddy. But Chris was always 100. I never know.
I'm glad you said though, because I wouldn't have known.
I wound up having to go to two funerals on Saturday, and it's like,
that ain't it, bro.
You know, both for guys younger than me. Man, enjoy life, enjoy the people that you love. When it's your time to go, there's nothing you can do.
True.
There's nothing you can do. That's one thing. I have a different relationship with death, even though I probably haven't had the therapy I need from some of the things that I've had to witness and deal with.
That's real.
But, my whole thing is like, you don't, for lack of a better term, you almost got to be ready to die. Because when your number is called, there's nothing the doctors can do. There's nothing you can do. Mind you, I do not court death. I put this out there.
No, for sure.
I still wear my seatbelt.
Yeah.
I try to eat some green leafy things from time to time. And I stay away from people who own guns and have low self-esteem. So
smart man.
These are things that you can do. But,
Nah, man. Just, shout out to the Flood. That's a good dude right there, man.
He was a good dude.
That was my first time actually meeting him. He was like, man, y'all are just like y'all are on the show all the time. I said,
yeah.
I was like, it ain't nothing changed. He was like, man, I love the show, man. I've been rocking with Jay Moore for a long time. That's a good dude. That's why I came over, blah, blah, blah. So, yeah, man, shout out to the Flood, bro. Rest in peace, man, for sure. So, did you guys see the post where Lizzo says she's quitting music?
I did.
Do y'all think that's one of these April Fool's things, or is this more believable? Because to me, based off how she broke it down, this might be a real situation. Did you see the post?
I did. I read it briefly. She said this before.
She has.
She does this every 6 months, doesn't she?
Because we've talked about this on the show before.
Well, I don't know if it was it this extreme, though?
I don't remember exactly what she said before or where the information came from. But because this was legitimately a statement from her, though. I read this one.
Right. And I've heard her in the past mention the... You know, the bullying and all that type of stuff.
First of all, I wrote Lizzo by the link. At this point, who's bullying her at this point? I'm not trying to be funny, but her records aren't super hot right now. Until this post popped up, I hadn't thought about Lizzo. I hadn't seen her on TV. I think she was in one of the little award shows.
Right.
But it's like, you know, Lizzo, I mean, like, this sounds like it's like when she got hot, all of a sudden there was attention, super amounts of attention. And a lot of people, they love being famous so much, and it's a drug. And it's like, we haven't been paying attention to Lizzo.
She's extremely talented.
That's the thing. No one ever said she wasn't.
Yeah, she's talented.
You know, but I saw her say something like, oh, it's just somebody, I'm not engaging with the negativity. I'm like, well, why were you engaging with it in the first point?
So let me ask you this then. So I guess kind of my angle was not necessarily more about Lizzo in terms of, because we know what comes with her. We've heard stuff I'm going to say similar to this. But what does it say more about the culture and society in terms of the pressure that artists are put under in terms of reactions and being in a reactionary world and everybody's got an opinion and all that type of stuff? Because I think it's something there to talk about as well.
You better get used to it. Okay. And, you know what I'm saying? Like, it would be like, you know, the criticism that we get on a weekly basis for whatever it is we talked about.
Yeah.
Either we turn off the comments for people on all of our platforms,
right,
or we just say we're not going to do it anymore. If you're not ready for, everyone is not going to love you.
I do know that.
You know, at this point, I figure there are people that watch us just to hate.
100%.
I appreciate them too, because that goes into the views and the clicks, and that's fine.
And they're anonymous. They're faceless.
Yeah.
On top of that, it's not
like I can go over to somebody's house and be like, "Hey, I saw that thing you said on episode 355."
That's why I got love for Nate Jeezy, because he'll hate on me in my face.
Exactly.
So I don't have to worry about that. So, I know he's hating on me.
You know. So if you want to take a certain level of fame and notoriety, I'm sorry, y'all got to start having much thicker skins about this, because someone's going to say, you know what? I remember, like, at one point, Cardi B and Joe Budden, you know, it was a situation because he said her music wasn't hot. And you know what? It wasn't. But when she put out a joint, her new joint, I was like, okay, this is going to be one of the ones for the summer. You know, so it's like, you can't expect people to love everything that you do, whether it be artistically, whether it be socially, like, the thing is, like, you know, I remember when we have talked about her before, someone said something about fat shaming. It's like, we didn't say nothing about her being fat.
No.
It's like, you just automatically went into a defense mode about, you know, something, a criticism we had of Lizzo. And we didn't say anything about her size or her weight. You know, now, mind you, it might, for you, the person who's listening, this is where it's Lizzo's fault. Every one of your social media accounts is titled Lizzo Be Eating, not Lizzo Be Singing, not Lizzo Be Playing, as far as the different instruments she knows how to play, not Lizzo Be Performing. It's Lizzo Be Eating.
Right.
And so there are people who are going to run with that regardless of what you say and who you are, or who you think you are to the public.
Right.
Yeah. Azealia Banks actually commented on this. Not that she's somebody that we're going to go to as like an expert opinion or anything. Let's go over to Azealia Banks for the commentary. No, it's not like that.
Who cares what Azealia Banks has to say at a time like this?
But she essentially said exactly what you just said. She was like, you know, stop worrying about these people, you know, but, you know, at the same time, you literally put yourself out here. This is the caricature that you built. Lizzo Be Eating. That is like, you're putting it out there. So if you don't want it, maybe you should approach this a little bit differently.
Nate Jeezy said in the chat, she's already backtracked. Laugh out loud.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised.
So, I mean, this is what makes me think, okay.
I guess that's why I'm leaning more towards just the culture conversation about what you're talking about.
Honestly, I don't even give it that. I think this is an attention grab. She's like, I need somebody to start talking about me again.
So this is a clout chase?
This is a clout chase. Okay. This is a clout chase. You know, I don't hear none of her records out. I don't hear them on the, I mean, not that I listen to that much radio. And she doesn't have a TV show. Like, she had that Lizzo's Big Girls Who Want to Dance show. And I'm not trying to be mean when I say that. That's basically
I never heard of that, bro.
Well, it was on Amazon, I guess.
All right.
And so, like, that, I guess even after they gave her an award for that, that's not popping anymore. And she's going through all this where people have accused her of doing some foul things, where they've accused her of fat shaming.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I remember that. Yeah.
You know, I don't think we discussed that, but I think I saw that.
Yeah, we talked about it a little bit. It wasn't.
Yeah, we talked about it very briefly.
Okay.
You know, and so when the last impression that you had in the public was a lawsuit,
yeah,
then you got to try to do something to get people back on your side. You know, she says this and I don't want to do this. And you're like, oh, Lizzo, we love you. Like, you're going to get that.
Right.
And this is a thing that a lot of celebrities do. So it's not just Lizzo. But I honestly think this was a weird clout chase when you don't have a hit song, you don't have a TV show, and the last impression people had of you was being sued over fat shaming when you look the way you look. Mm. And once again, I'm not trying. That's not a shot. But you've embraced the fact that, you know, you do not fit the mold of the traditional music superstar.
Yeah. But then at the same time, you're going to be hypocritical towards that with the people that are around you. Yeah. This is the statement that she made in case anybody is interested in reading it.
Appreciate you sharing that, brother.
I'm getting tired of putting up with being dragged by everyone in my life and on the internet. All I want is to make music and make people happy, and I help the world be a little better than how I found it. But I'm starting to feel like the world doesn't want me in it. I'm constantly up and against lies being told about me for clout and views, being the butt of every joke every single time because of how I look, my character being picked apart by people who don't know me and disrespecting my name. I didn't sign up for this I quit. So yeah, anyways.
And there's already been, as we said, a report of a backtrack,
but
which leads to,
I mean, she's got four posts on Instagram since then, it looks like, and one of them is literally looks like promoting
a product or something, or a song or something like that.
Maybe it's just photos, I don't know. But
I saw one that looks that as you scroll, one of them, the one on the far left, looks like she's talking about a product.
Yeti. Either way, yeah, I don't really care. But
yeah, Lizzo. I mean, like, if you hear, turn off your comments. I don't know.
Yeah, which she did for that post, so she knows how to do it.
Mm-hmm. So don't act like you didn't know what you. I'm not saying you didn't know what you were getting into, but. I mean, you know what it is.
Yeah.
Like I said earlier in the show, none of us are famous, but you know, we might say something to make somebody famous upset, and that's what comes with it.
We'll be back after a quick break.
But you still loading them and heating them up with all your single shit you've been dropping. You feel me? Loading them up on it only takes structure, and you know, just paying attention to the climate of the game.
Yeah.
Know what I mean?
So do your homies got a role in your little, you know what I mean?
Yeah, we all artists over here, man. I'm trying to get them on there. We all artists, man. Me and my man Kyle, we be like, I don't know, we play with this shit right now.
Don't play with it.
Take that shit serious.
Yep.
I want to be a nerd for a minute. Yeah, Jay Moore, don't do that. Excuse us on this one, because this is going to be catered more towards my brother Lone on this one. But there's a conversation about type beats for producers. Now, we know what that is when somebody says J. Cole type beat or Kendrick type beat. You go to YouTube and find it, right? There's this shout out to this Instagram page, The Producer Lounge. It's a podcast where producers come on and talk. Actually, I stumbled upon it. It's pretty cool. They have beat showcases and everything. So shout out to them. But there's a conversation with producers talking about the approach and how they feel about tight beat producers. There's a video attached to it. I want to play. Let's play this and then we can jump in and react.
Producer Lounge and name brand music. Let's see what we got.
A tight beat producer.
So that's such an icky thing. I know it's a whole scene, it really is. And you're right. No disrespect to anybody who specifically makes
and
tight
cool.
beats,
but it's kind of fucking lame.
Yeah, I mean, it's
just make your own sound.
Just have fun with it.
That's the thing, and that's what makes it not lame. It's like everyone has their own motivations. Mm-hmm. I'm not motivated to be the next Dre. I'm motivated to just be myself,
right?
Put music out. If people like it, that's great.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people get into this to be with like fucking stars in their eyes, thinking like, oh my god, I'm gonna be that, you know?
Right.
Do what the fuck you want, but I don't think that's a valuable mindset.
Yeah, I don't think it's as fun.
Just have fun. If it happens, it happens, and if it happens, it's because did something right
on your own terms.
Mm-hmm. Like, I'll never be a type beat.
So, okay, Lone, I'm coming to you first. being a resident producer here. What does that make you feel like when you hear it? Because I heard good points on both sides, but I've never been that person. I don't know a lot of people that are that, but I could see some people being successful, maybe going down that route and finding a, you know, finding a pocket that works for them and perhaps getting placements. I don't know, but I've never been that person.
Well, as somebody who teaches this and has students and actually has students that put out tight beats,
right.
I think it's a marketing approach more than anything.
Okay.
I think, and this is no disrespect to these fellas here or anybody that necessarily agrees with this, because I think you probably historically would fall in line with their thinking. But I look at this more so as a way to market the creativity that you have as opposed to trying to mimic a certain type of style. So, for example, I have a producer. I have two students right now that release type beats. And it's not like they're going out and trying to make Mike Will Made It style beats, or they're going out trying to make a beat that sounds like something else. They're just using it as whatever beats that they make, they're marketing, they're using the algorithm to market to people that are looking for that. To me, that is a different approach than the typical idea from, I kind of want to say elitist, it's kind of an elitist producer type of mindset to kind of say like
that this is a bad approach.
It's a bad approach because the producers are looking at it from an angle of like, oh, well, you're not being original, you're not being creative, you're just trying to make something that sounds like other people,
latch on to something else
for sure. Right. And I think that can potentially be approach for some producers,
right?
But at the same time, that's not how everybody utilizes it. And I'm pretty sure that the two producers that I know personally that do this don't do it that way.
Here's where I'm conflicted, right? So on one hand, the purist, if you will, in me says, be creative. You know me damn near my whole life. You know me. I like to keep my bag open. I pride myself on being a person you can put anywhere. So I say that to say I'm conflicted because I get, from a creative standpoint, I want you to be creative and just do you. That's the school that we came up from, right?
Yeah.
But the flip side to the type beat argument is, to me, that shows my bag. It shows my versatility. It shows what I can do from a marketing standpoint and a promoting myself standpoint. So that's why I'm kind of torn to what, speaking to what you're saying, because if I can do three different type beats, it's like, well, damn, I can get him in his pocket, this one. This one, who knows what else he has outside of that? You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, I think the part that kind of rubs people wrong is when you're doing a type beat with somebody else's type of name. So like if Longevity makes a Metro Boomin type beat, it kind of makes my name seem less important than Metro Boomin, which people can say that it is, but whatever.
Because
I'm like attaching my sound to another person's type. And I think that's where the producers are like, nah, just be yourself. I think that's where it's rooted from.
So it's like have
the self-respect of yourself.
That's the part.
To just put out your own stuff and do that. But what a lot of these producers that are doing type beats are just saying, nah, you know what? They are bigger than me.
They are.
If I have use my name, or if I use their name and the style of beats, and it is that style of beats, I'm going to get more people on the stuff that I'm doing.
Right.
You're playing the algorithm game. You're playing the game that they're setting up for us. Otherwise, you're just banging your head against the wall, really.
Right. Right.
And you're just playing the super long game. And I don't know. So I agree with what you're saying.
You see what I'm saying? But because to me, if I'm scouting with two sports analogy, if you're scouting somebody, if you're a baseball person, it's like, yeah, this dude is a five tool dude. He hit for average, he hit for power, he can, you know, bases.
Shades of Alex Rodriguez.
Thank you.
But it's like
great player though. Don't do that.
No.
I know where you're going. Don't do that.
No, it's cool.
But
we're
gonna leave that alone. What I'm saying is, if there's a producer that I can look at and say, I want to put him on my team if I'm building a squad, he's got four different type beats plus a whole catalog. Yeah,
for sure.
I'm more than likely I'm going to gravitate towards him. It's just
there's a difference between, look, there's a reason why, like, okay, there's a difference in, let's get a little deeper. There's a difference in producer styles when you think of a Denon Porter versus if you think of a hit maker or if you think of a hit boy.
I agree.
And the main difference there is that Denon Porter is a chameleon.
Yeah.
He is super talented and he can do a whole bunch of different styles.
He can.
Hitmaker is going to give you the same thing.
And it's going to be high quality at the, for what he does.
Yeah. He knows how to flip those samples.
100%.
Sure. Maybe Hit Boy is not really a good example, but
Hit Boy is a little more versatile.
He is.
Yeah, he's a little more versatile. I would
say that, yeah.
He's a little more versatile.
But, you know, but there are certain producers that will, you know exactly which, I was just having this conversation, I think, today. There are certain producers that will give you, there's something to be said about having a particular sound as a producer, and it being important to your growth as a producer. For as versatile as Pharrell is, we know a Pharrell beat when we hear it. As versatile as Timbaland is, we know a Timbaland beat.
True.
Same with Alchemist now. We know a Derringer beat. We know these producers because of how they sound, regardless of
Primo.
Yeah, Primo. Exactly. You know what I mean? So I think to a degree, it's harder to be a producer that is a chameleon that can do all these different styles and to do all these different styles well and to stand out on top of it if you don't already have a whole lot of, let's just call it, clout in the industry or whatnot. It's harder to stand out when you are better.
Right.
And to me, Tight Beats is just a way that I don't personally do Tight Beats, but I understand why people do them. And I was previously pretty anti-Tight Beats, but I get it to an extent. I still think it's better to kind of build your own thing and all that stuff, but I understand the marketing tool behind
it. I had to open my mind up to it. I had to open my mind up to the concept of it because, you know, of what we're talking about. So there's always an approach to it, so I get it, but
I think it's just marketing. Marketing. It's just like, all right, cool. If I can get 500 people to get their eyes on this beat as opposed to 35, I don't know. You know,
and then it's like, okay, so I got you here by the Tight Beat. Now go down the rabbit hole and see what I really do.
For sure.
That's what I see.
It's just kind of like, you know, how much are you willing to suffer for your pride?
Right.
I guess. I don't know.
Nah, I figure. Jay, I ain't want to lose you on this one, but I know you can jump in, but me and Lone had to nerd out real quick on this one.
No, so. I mean, I think for specifically the younger producers.
Right.
I don't know if they see it the same way as you guys do, because so a lot of times you are your influences.
I'm sure they don't.
You know, with the producer I think about, and it's just like at one point he was on fire and then like we just don't talk about him anymore. He might still be working. We just don't know. But Lex Luger.
Yeah, I remember him. He just kind of disappeared.
And like he wasn't just like he was a producer. He was the stuff that was in the club and it was banging.
Wait, who you say?
Lex Luger.
Oh my God, he had with Rick Ross and BMF
and stuff he's doing with Waka Flocka. I don't know if his sound became passe. I don't think it did because those records still ring off today.
They do.
But then like I see a lot of the producers that we talk about now being his kids, if you will.
Yeah.
Think about the Take Heaths, mm-hmm. you think about even he just did the thing with Future.
Metro Boomin.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know what the timeline is of when Metro Boomin started moving and then when Take Heath, if any, if you look at the Venn diagram. What the overlap is, but I'm like, you know, those producers are Lex Luger's kids.
Right. Yeah.
You know, and.
And interestingly enough, right around the time Lex Luger was out was when Tight Beats, I would say, probably were kind of starting to really thrive. You started to see those on YouTube quite a bit. And there were a lot of Lex Luger Tight Beats out there.
But that era also shows you that, to Lone's point about the Tight Beats and when that actually starts or when it started, there are plenty of producers that I can think of that fall in that category. It's talk about Lex Luger, right? Like he definitely is a Tight Beat where I saw plenty of those, but it's also the Runners.
Right.
You remember the Runners? Yeah. Like with his work on Rick Ross and Khaled and all that.
Cool and Dre.
Cool. Like those, I started to see that as well. Runners Tight Beat. DJ Khaled and the Runners Tight Beat. Like I started seeing you see that as well. There's a lot of producers out there that have Tight Beats, Gucci Tight Beat, Jeezy Tight Beat.
That's where I'm going to get to here. So that's a little different. Do you view this differently if it's instead of it's a Metro Boomin Tight Beat or a Lex Luger Tight Beat or as opposed to a Gucci Tight Beat or a Kendrick Tight Beat or an Aaliyah Tight Beat, where instead of it being about the producer, it's more about the artist that maybe an artist is trying to look for? Because that's what I tell my students. I was like, look, if you make something that's more like a Kendrick Tight Beat, then you're going to find the artists that are looking for beats that sound like Kendrick Lamar as opposed to just a producer sound. Like if you know that you want to rap like J. Cole, maybe it makes more sense to have a J. Cole type beat, or you want to sound like the Lox, maybe the Lox instead of like the Hitman, because more people are going to search it.
That's where a lot of people really, if you're an artist and you're trying to come up, you know, at one point people were like, I want some Blueprint beats.
Mm-hmm.
And they weren't going, you know.
Yeah.
Look, if you, I can like, and I'm not, and things, I love this album, but when I hear that, you know, Jay said people trying to make the Blueprint 2 before Hov.
Mm-hmm.
That's how I feel about Asiatic by AZ.
Oh, don't do that.
Yeah, but listen to them beats.
Asiatic is a really good album.
It's a really good album, but when I, part of the reason I love it so much because it fits right with the first Blueprint.
They came out the same year, within X amount of months of each other.
But you know, when I hear, and I'm not looking at it, I'm not saying that's what AZ did, but all I'm saying is, and that's just what comes to mind immediately when I heard Asiatic. I was like,
Hold on, Jay.
I know somebody's gonna be mad, but
I love Asiatic.
I do. Other than Take It Off, but Take It Off fits on that album the same way like Hola Jovito fits on the Blueprint.
So June 11th, 2002 is Asiatic. Okay. Right?
September 11th, 2001 is Blueprint. That's enough time. I'm not accusing AZ of that, but you know, I remember in that time period when all I had to do was like go to
Asiatic was fire,
was,
man.
Was, you know, try to get a little studying in, work at the radio station and listen to all the promo CDs I got sent. I do remember thinking, okay, these beats sound, because remember what the sound was of the time when the Blueprint came out? That's when Lil Jon was running urban radio.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And you know, Jay-Z could have taken the easy way out and had a whole like Lil Jon, like he could have jumped on that. Instead, he went, took it back to the.
He was like, I'm about to get Kanye. I'm gonna get Just Blaze. I'm gonna get Bink, and we're gonna do these soul.
Because the Blueprint at the time sounded completely different from not only any Jay-Z album, but the majority of mainstream commercial hip hop albums at the time.
I agree.
I think Type Beats is just the modern day version of like what 50 Cent was doing early in his career when he was working with a bunch of producers that nobody had heard of. 50 used to put on a bunch of random producers on his stuff, right?
Shout out to my homie Nas Cent and the homie QB.
Right.
The homies that we know from Nas Cent's from Chicago.
Right.
He got some work with 50.
But,
yes.
But what I'm saying is like that's essentially what we praised 50 for doing was finding producers that weren't household names.
He did.
And putting them on stuff. And isn't that kind of the same thing that what these Type Beats are doing is producers that nobody, it's what when J. Cole went out and got that random Type Beat and rapped on it. It's kind of the same thing, right?
Lupe and Kaylin Ellis.
Yeah, Lupe and Kaylin Ellis.
Kaylin Ellis, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Same thing.
So, I mean, I don't know. I guess I just kind of see it as more now maybe the more I look at it is just a modern way to communicate because people aren't in the studios as much. It's kind of a way to bypass the politics a little bit maybe that you're not going to have and just get directly to the heat.
I think Jay Moore made a good point about the generational part, the age gap, the thinking.
Yeah.
I think that's a big part in it because the guys that were on the clip that we looked at, if I was to take a guess, they grown.
They're like our age probably.
Right. Yeah. Or a couple years younger than us, give or take. But these is grown folks, right? So when I saw that, I'm like, yeah, we probably cut from the same cloth or at least came up from the same school. But Jay Moore made a good point when he said the younger people probably don't see it like that.
Yeah.
And I'm not mad at that because I could see that for sure.
Yeah, I think it's definitely some old head shit.
Yeah.
Just think about how many people, you know, some of them you probably know or you've worked with or people, your students specifically, who pray at the altar of Jay Dilla.
For sure.
Mm.
You know, there's a lot of people who are, they might not even know it, but they're making Jay Dilla type beats.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's kind of interesting. I think it kind of shows how fickle and how hard it is to be a music producer, that music producers get mad at this.
Yeah.
Because like, for example, I just got I got a drum pack recently from a homie and one label was like Alchemist Style. Another one was Dilla Style. It's the same thing. It's like It's like we all do it to a certain degree. It's just,
wow. I didn't even think about that. You're right. That's what the folder said.
Yeah,
But
it's great because every style that he had on there were those styles, but it's like this is the case for a lot of things, but producers a lot of times are so jaded that I think sometimes they try to, it's like because there's not a lot of love in it, especially depending on how you do it, it's just kind of this elitist type of thing where you don't want to spread love, you don't want to share love, you don't want to give up a little bit of maybe clout that you've gained throughout the years, a little bit of the dues that you've gained from doing it your ways. But your way. And to some degree, I understand it, but I don't know, man. I just kind of see it as kind of it's just not the way.
I think with creatives, or I'm just going to say creatives, but with producers or musicians, sometimes our integrity will come into play to say, I didn't have to go this route in order for me to get to XYZ. And there's always somebody that's like, I don't care what the route is, I got to XYZ via type beats, right, via whatever, right? So, and I think that's the generational gap, because maybe there's more quote unquote integrity in the older generation versus now, where it's like, it's instant gratification. Okay, so this will get me there. Okay, cool, I'm about to do it.
So I guess the other side of that point is if there are quote unquote music producers, if we want to call them that, and they're literally out there just mimicking styles just because they want to play the algorithm, that is another thing.
Okay, I can dig that.
You know, like if I'm a music producer and I'm just like, you know what, I'm going to try to make 10 DJ Premier beats.
Yeah.
And then I'm going to tag them as DJ Premier type beats.
Right.
I think that's probably more so what they're kind of speaking on. But I don't know. I feel like if it's truly your style and you're trying to find where your style fits on here, I think it's perfectly fine to do.
This is so random because you bring a Premier. How many, did either of you think that when you first heard Annie Up, it was DJ Premier?
No. Is it?
Not.
Honestly.
No, I didn't.
No, I didn't.
The only reason I thought that is because of the edited version. Because the way, you know, because like some people will just like blank out the word, or they'll put sound effects in it. Mm-hmm. Like, I can't remember who did that, but it basically the way the edited version sounded.
It sounded
like a DJ Premier.
Because has that blank edit. He has that blank space in his beats a lot.
No, he has like little, like, he had the sound
it's
effects.
It's like a pause kind of.
No, it'd be like, we had to bring it up and maybe
I'd have to hear it because
what I'm saying to that is that DJ Premier, a lot of times in his early beats, it would do stuff, but in the second half of the beat, I only know this because I study DJ Premier, but like it would literally, there would be an empty space at the end right before it looped back around.
I'm talking about like, say there was a curse word, they were trying to edit the curse word.
Right.
It wouldn't just be a blank. It would just, there were certain sound effects that he would use to cover the curses, and they were similar.
Effects specifically.
Yes. In Annie Up. That's why I thought when I first heard Annie, when I found out Annie Up was not done by DJ Premier, I was like, oh, really?
Huh. I wish we could do that, but we probably get a strike.
We're not doing that.
But maybe
what I'm talking about. If not, hey, you know.
Good call though, because I never thought, to my knowledge, I don't think I ever thought that was Primo.
No, I didn't. There's a remix to that though.
Because Primo,
there's a remix with Remy Ma. That was her first appearance.
Because with Primo, I'm always looking for. Primo has like a 98% rate of scratches on the hook. Unless
this is true.
Yeah. Unless there's, even with, think about Royalty. Like, Royalty's got Casey and JoJo singing on it, but if I'm not mistaken, and I'm old, there's cuts and stuff going on that record. Am I tripping?
No.
So,
DJ Premier is so crazy because he'll make a dope beat with only two notes.
He will.
You know, the Ten Crack Commandments is two notes.
Like, I always tell people, like, there's a video of, oh my God, what's the record? It's the Ludacris record, MVP, I think it's called MVP, where Primo does scratches for Ludacris, right? So the beat is cold, but I saw Primo's value when I saw him pick through Ludacris's acapellas and go through the songs and make them talk to match what he was talking about on the song. I'm like, that's why he's Primo. The beat was dope, but that's why he's DJ Premier. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Another thing that Primo does really well is he plays with empty space on beats.
Facts.
Really well, that a lot of people don't. And, you know, it's with like drops within his own beats sometimes. And he always plays it up. It always builds up and then it kind of like drops down in the last part. And in the last part, there's always like some, he just plays with silence almost in ways that other people don't. But yeah.
Yeah. Anyways. Shout out to Primo, man. Love to have him on the show. That'd be cool, wouldn't it?
No.
Yeah. We got to break our rule if Primo come through long.
No.
Yeah.
Why?
But I would just want to talk.
For clout.
I just wanted him to sit here and talk to us about
we don't have to talk. Like, we can just let him talk.
Don't get me wrong. Like, you know, I'd be like,
You say anybody, I'm always going to be like, no, why?
I'm just saying.
Why would we have Obama on the show? No. We're not going
to
do that.
I'm just saying, though, Jay Moore, Primo come through. We just going to have to.
Yeah, he sit down and we talk to him about what we want to talk about. Yeah.
I mean, which, you know, might be tailored to what he wants to talk about, but.
Yeah, probably not. But shout out to Primo. And he got a song with Snoop Dogg out this
episode. I didn't hear it yet.
I like it.
Okay.
I rock, but I like Preem and like Snoop Dogg, so that wasn't a hard sell for me.
Two OGs, so I have faith. Can we shout out our partners there, brother?
All right.
Thanks to our partners. Dr. Coleman of Coleman Dental is our go-to dentist. He's a longtime Indianapolis arts and music supporter located right in Broad Ripple. Printfinity is a screen printing shop based in Indianapolis, owned and operated by our own DJ J Diff. Our good friends at Indy CD and Vinyl operate one of the best record stores in North America. Shop new and used in their site or visit them in person. And the best way to support the new old heads is to visit our Patreon and become a member for as little as $3 a month. All details on newoldheads.com. Did you know that we release a live and uncut extended 2-hour show on Patreon every week? Here's a short excerpt that you can get if you sign up.
What I take from this...
Don't sum this up. It's only going to get
worse. I'm trying my best. I'm trying. So I sum this up as Magic Johnson was getting blood transfusions in Nova Scotia.
That was the rumor.
And Ernie Hudson gets blood from children in Brooklyn or something like that.
No,
like,
maybe he had the
You don't
same
want
doctor.
That blood from them kids in Brooklyn?
Why not?
I don't know.
Do you want blood from a 12-year-old in Brooklyn?
No, I'm not answering this. That's stupid.
Hey, you know,
I'm not answering
this. You know what was one of the worst rumors ever?
Yo, who asked that, though? Do you want blood from children in what? So on this show, we have always talked about responsibility as it relates to artists and reading that damn contract, right? This is what we've talked about a lot. Like, there's a lot, there's not that much, you know, support or sympathy or empathy for people that don't read their contracts on this show. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I would say.
Yeah, at this point, not really.
What I'm saying is over our time, we've come to the conclusion where you want to try to read your contract before you sign it. Is that fair?
We have preached to artists on this show that you need to read your contract.
That's what I'm looking for. Okay, cool. Okay. So Nick Cannon was being interviewed, and he talked about how the lawyers have a certain play in this, and it might not necessarily, like, the reading of the contract is important, but there's two sides to it. There's the lawyer, and then there's the record label relationship on the opposite side.
So the relationship with
between the lawyer and the record label that might influence certain things.
Of interest.
There we go.
I see.
So let's run the clip on this one, and then we can react and discuss.
Complain about their contracts because they had horrible attorneys. Your attorney was actually in pocket with the label.
Mm-hmm.
And they actually trying to get in good with the label because the label got the best attorneys.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And so if you want to be able to continue to work, not just with this artist, but all of your artists and elevate because they want that job.
Mm-hmm. Give your publishing up. Don't worry about it. It's not that deep.
And they're going to come to you and tell you, oh, no, this is the best deal I could get for you, when really they having drinks with the motherfuckers they was negotiating with.
And what you don't understand is you... On the outside, you the new artist, you come through, you like, I'm getting such and such attorney that he been kicking it with them for 35 years.
For 35
years. Was representing special ed back in the day.
And that's the same thing when it comes to these child support lawyers, these divorce attorneys. Mm. They all
know each other.
So, upon hearing that, shout out to Gillian Wallow, because that's the source or whatever. Or that's where Nick Cannon was. But does that, I'm not going to say alter your perception or how you think, but does it at least make you look at it from a different lens? Because to me, that sounds valid.
I think this is what we've always kind of suggested, though.
You think so?
Is that there are a lot of snakes in the industry, and that you have to be on top of your P's and Q's because everybody's out to get you.
In addition to reading your contract.
This is part of...
You can't read your contract. It's written... And almost, it might as well be written in Klingon.
To me, it would be Braille. Like, the contract would be Braille. Like, it'd be something I couldn't read. Like,
I guess maybe to an extent. I'm being honest, but I don't know. I think it still falls in line. To me, it's an extension of what we say. Mm-hmm. So I guess it's something to be aware of.
Do you buy what Nick Cannon is saying from a standpoint of lawyers being in bed with the labels and, you know, some type of foul play perhaps being on the back end? I don't think this is far-fetched at all.
I don't think it's far-fetched, but also we talked about making the band a few weeks
ago.
Yes,
yes.
And I just remember when they were like, okay, we're gonna pick a manager. And this episode stands out to me more than anything because it's like they picked a manager and they picked Puff Daddy's manager.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
I'm like,
easily one of the dumbest decisions ever made in real life, in real time.
You know, and I was like, there are a lot of things that are conflicts of interest that if you're an artist you don't know. And You can be mad at the artist. You can be mad at the person introduced the conflict of interest. But, you know, it gets down to like, maybe you should talk to the person who has a good deal. And true. Who is their lawyer?
Yeah. True.
You know, because if your label is suggesting a lawyer, you might as well just get ready to get robbed. You know, and that's what happens a lot of times. It's like the label will say, we'll give you a manager. We'll give you a lawyer.
We'll
that's that should be illegal, technically.
Yeah, it should.
You know, and maybe in some places it is, but I'm just
because it smells like a set. It's a setup.
It's a setup. All these people are going to go ahead and say, OK, this is what we got for his career. We're only going to give him this much money. We're going to bend the advantage to ourselves. We're not here to take care of these kids. If they don't know any better, then F them, you know, so
capitalism.
Well, there you go.
There we go, Loan.
You know, so
I want to make sure you got it in.
You know, and
it's true, though.
It is.
And it's hard because, you know, a lot of these kids, they're coming from artistic places or they're coming from the street. You know, they don't trust lawyers anyway, because only time they see a lawyer is when they go to court, and they'll get the same lawyer that helped them get out of a jam on a criminal situation. That doesn't make you an entertainment lawyer.
That's right. Fair.
You know, there are so many. It's just the same way, you know, you wouldn't go to a podiatrist if you had a heart problem.
That's fair.
You know, I remember Mike Tyson, when he was going through his law, he basically had a tax lawyer trying to defend him on a criminal case. And it's like, well, no wonder he lost. You know,
there's different levels of expertise in these things.
Exactly. Sure. So I think that I don't know who Jay-Z's lawyers are. I don't know who Nas or any, you know, because there's some people who have never complained about being robbed by the music industry. Those are you should find out who those people are.
Yeah.
And get your lawyers.
Try to associate with them.
Yeah. And see exactly what advice you could get from them as far as the lawyers and the people who aren't out here to rob. Because you hear about, the whole thing with this Nickelodeon thing.
Yeah.
Right.
Where. You know, they talked to Kenan Thompson. He didn't have direct knowledge of that stuff.
Right.
But he talked about how, like, somebody robbed him of basically the money he made when he was at Nickelodeon. And it was his accountant and lawyer at the time.
Right.
A lot of these people do not. That's the only way they get over. That's the only reason they're getting paid. That's why the only reason that why they don't have no talent as far as being on the screen or right. being on the microphone. You know, so they're only getting a percentage, and say they don't have enough percentages to make up for the point where they could be as rich as the people that they represent. Then they're going to start robbing.
And Keelan.
I see what you robber. Yeah, I see.
I remember when I bought my first house, and I'll just put it like this. I bought the house from an uncle, my uncle's brother. I didn't know what I was doing. I was young. I mean, I was old enough to know better, but I didn't know better.
Right.
And, it was my first house, just had a good job, you know, bought a car, did all this stuff. And, you know, it was like, hey, you know, my brother's got a house for sale. Come check it out. I wasn't looking, but I looked at it and I was like, oh, this looks like it's pretty good. And he was like, you know, I have the inspection person already here. I already have a realtor that I work with. You can just use her. You can do all this stuff. And I did pretty much the electrician, the person that was buying the house, I already knew.
All of the setup
was already set up, you know. And
you're thinking they're making this much easier for me.
Exactly. You know, and as naive as I was at the time, you know, I'm just like, okay, it's making a very complicated process a lot easier for me to get what I need. When
it's
realistic,
it's a family lead.
Yeah. Which in realistic, which is how a lot of this stuff, you know, I don't want to say family necessarily, but I'm just articulating how it stretches across multiple ranges. But, you know, years later, I don't live in that house anymore.
Right.
I had to move out of that house because of crazy amount of mold and a bunch of other issues related to
it. I remember.
And, you know, looking back on it, I would have done the entire thing a whole lot differently. And I probably could have got the house for a lot less if I would have not, you know what I mean? Like if it wasn't. So it's just, it goes around everywhere. You know, I don't really blame anybody for that except for myself, but these situations are messed up, and people are always going to be preying on, people are always going to prey on those that are younger, even if it's not like a direct, it's not the preying that you envision, you know, like the, oh, I see this young artist and I'm going to take advantage of him and take him for everything he's got. No, people are just looking for their piece a lot of times too, and to put their people in positions, whether or not, you know, it's good for the whole situation or not. So to Nick Cannon and Wallow and them, well, that was Gilly, right?
Wallow and Gilly. Yeah.
Yeah, it was both of them.
But to listen to them talk about them, they are all people that have credentials to talk about this particular thing. So I have no reason to not believe anything that they're saying right now.
They've all been through the major label system.
Yeah,
it lends a label. Lends a level of credibility to that, because it's coming from people that I'm assuming have been through it multiple times and understand.
So outside of me just believing them anyways, based upon what I know, that adds another level of credentials to it. So for you asking, you know, do you believe it or not? Yeah, absolutely.
But I don't look. I'm just like, how are you in 2024 still getting the new edition, the TLC, the
NWA deal? That's different.
Like to where, like in the contract for the DLC as a writer, like it literally has the words "watch and chain" as payment.
Yeah.
So that tells me that at this point, I would assume with technology and the knowledge and everything that you that these artists have at their disposal, if you're still signing up for those, then you just don't have a lot of people around you that care about you at this point.
But also, you
can, a lot of smoke screens out here.
I agree with that too.
Sometimes it's hard to find the right information if you don't know where to look.
And be clear, because I'm not. I want to make sure I make this clear, because even though the right people might not be the right people,
for sure.
So that don't forget that part.
Yeah.
But this is the game they run on. You know, a lot of people who are look. If I show you a briefcase and it has $50,000 in it,
right.
And I show you a check for $150,000. I'm coming straight from an improvised situation. And you say, oh, you're going to have to wait 7 days for that check. And you got to be able to take it to your bank.
For it to clear.
I might be coming from a situation. I don't have a bank.
Right.
Bank? What are you talking about?
Give me the cash.
You know, I can't wait 7 days. They're about to put my mother out on the street today.
Right.
And you tell me here's $50,000 in greenback cash that I can a lot. It happens in sports. It happens in music. It happens. Right. Like people will take. There are people. I mean, I wouldn't do it. You wouldn't do it. You wouldn't do it.
Right.
But there are people out there. If you offer them $50,000 in cash, let's go. Yeah. As opposed to $150,000 in a check.
And that's fair.
And sometimes the situations. I mean, I could even take it even further. Sometimes the situations are set up for certain people to not be. They couldn't take the check if they wanted to. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not going to go into a crazy amount of detail, but we're dealing with a lot of, with my wife immigrating here, migrating here. We're dealing with a lot of that stuff right now.
Yeah.
To where it's just, it's the amount of loops and loopholes that it takes to be quote unquote legal here and to do everything by the books. I understand why people come here and are not documented.
Yeah.
I get it.
Yeah.
They make it so hard, one, you know, but it's neither here nor there. But
yeah.
Oh, I know.
But at the same time, it's like, you know, like it's like that for all walks of life and all things. So yeah, that's a good point, Jay.
But nah, man, when I saw Nick talking about that, I was like, yeah, this will be a good one, because you can see it in his eyes. You can see the seriousness with which he's discussing it. You know what I'm saying?
He's probably seen it firsthand, being somebody who's had a record contract. Like, Nick's put out music. I mean, people will say what they, but you know, he's been
an artist for a long time.
He's been inside the major label system when records were actually selling.
Did you like Gigolo?
I can't front and say I didn't.
At least you're honest.
I can honestly say, and this is not even a clown, I don't like any Nick Cannon music.
Gigolo was straight.
No, that's the only song I know.
But I don't know any Nick Cannon music. I don't know any songs that he's done. But
Gigolo with a lot. Well, never mind.
Wait, is that his song?
Yes, Nick Cannon.
Produced by one Mr. Redacted. Is that what we're doing? Because as I heard the show last, and y'all was saying Redacted.
Come on, man.
Did he?
Come on.
Also starts with an R.
Is it? No. Sing the song.
Why was you?
Because you know it. Sing it.
I'm a gigolo with a lot of
so many. Oh,
okay. What am I thinking of? It's like
that's gigolo.
Gigolo.
Oh,
I think it's different.
No, you're thinking of something else.
I don't know what you're doing there.
I'm thinking of a Royce the 5'9" song off of Street Hop that Fonte sings on.
Okay, so we in two different alternate universes right now. Like, I don't know what, because we in two different universes right now.
Because Fonte goes, hoo, hoo.
Yeah, when you hit the note, I was like, no, that's not Gigolo.
What am I hearing? You know,
me and Jay Moore was in a whole different multiverse.
So it makes sense. I don't know any Nick Cannon songs, I don't think. I guess that's what I'm saying.
So let's talk Uncle Rick. Now, Uncle Rick has popped up a couple. Rick Rubin.
No, Slick Rick? Who are you talking about?
The ruler will be Slick Rick. I call him
Uncle
ruler.
Ricky.
But
I know you remember that.
Mm-hmm. Oh, for sure.
He could be Uncle Rick.
Rick Rubin, I'm fascinated with him for some reason, because all of these comments, but he always seems to say something that's provocative or makes me think, or maybe it's just his vibe or his wisdom. I don't know, man. Or he's just one of them dudes that looks like he had Woodstock or whatever and got a whole bunch of...
It's the beard.
Maybe it's the beard, bro.
That's the only reason.
Maybe it's the Three Stacks interview or whatever. But he had an interview where he talks about well, not an interview based off this, but it was a comment that was pulled from an interview where he talks about Hit Records and how Hit Records are received from a fan standpoint.
I'm thinking everybody likes it. Chances are you haven't gone far enough. The best work divides the audience. The best work, people love it and people hate it. Otherwise, it doesn't have a strong enough charge. It's always been this case. It's always been the things that people are picketing are the same things that are the fans' favorite. If you make something and everybody likes it, chances are you haven't gone far enough.
Okay. Yeah. What do y'all think about that from a Hit Record, you know, or just a product being your best product? Take Hit Records out of it. Just your best product overall. Does it have to be that polarizing in order for it to land? Because to me, that's what he's saying. Y'all correct me if you're wrong. Based off what you heard from him, it's got to be we're either over here. There is no gray area.
Yeah.
Or we're over here.
I think there. No. Because there are certain songs, certain pieces of work. Like, I don't think anybody can really get on television or whatever medium that you want to say and say, you know what's not good? Goodfellas. That movie sucks for these reasons.
I could probably.
I mean, you could probably, but you could do that with anything.
That's true.
Very good point.
That's true.
You know, I mean, even if you say aren't a Prince fan, you can't be like, eh, you know what really isn't good? Purple Rain. Not as a song, not as an album.
Right. I can't say that.
You know, I don't. Sure. I think sometimes you can make a piece of art that is almost above criticism, unless you're just talking about people who hate or people who just aren't in a position to make a critical analysis of the said piece of art. Like, you know, you could if certain people say if I presented them with Nas's Illmatic and they said, I don't like this. I was like, well, why don't you like it? I don't like it because it's not as good as my favorite Rolling Stones album. It's like, well, you shouldn't be comparing those two.
Yeah, it's like, what don't you like about the album?
You know, your experience, the things that you enjoy have nothing to do with this particular album. You're not going to like anything in this category. You know, so like that's why I don't listen to everybody's opinion about hip hop. Like if you have there are certain people who can have an opinion about hip hop and so, I'll listen to them and I'll be like, OK, you made a critical analysis of why this doesn't work, why this doesn't sound good, why this is actually like I heard of all people and shout out to him because I'm just a fan of the content he creates. Bomani Jones.
Yeah, shout out to Bomani. I like him.
He talked about how Babyface is not a good writer. And he talked about how, like, you know, when he tried to give Babyface, that is, tried to give some certain songs to Anita Baker, she said no. And they wound up going to Toni Braxton and becoming the biggest songs that she had put out.
First of all, that comment is cap.
Because, you know, when I think, okay, there are some songs where I can go back and critically listen and say, no, that's not that good. But then there's things that Babyface have done. I'd be like, he's done things that are way better than the average writer has been able to do. Is he Stevie Wonder? Absolutely not. But who is Stevie Wonder?
Thank you.
You know, other than Stevie Wonder, you know, like you're talking about someone who had a genius period that is, as far as I'm concerned, has never been matched.
It's unmatched.
But, you know, like at least he tried to make a critical comparison and a critical that I could at least. I actually respect his opinion enough to go back and say, okay, maybe he's right here, but by and large, he's wrong.
So are you, if I was to get a direct stance on what he said, are you against the concept of that record or your best work being that provocative? I want to make sure I get you on record for that.
Sometimes a piece of art, whether it be a movie, a song, an entire album, a video game, a painting, like sometimes you just got to say, you know what? It was good. That's good enough for the audience it was intended for.
Right.
Sometimes you got to think about that. The audience it's intended for. They love it. 99. It's Rotten Tomatoes 99, whatever.
I got you.
And it makes sense. And you the people who don't like it, it wasn't intended for, or they're just hating.
Talk to me, Long. Is there any merit to that or to what? Where Rick's at?
There were two statements that he made. So he said essentially that if everybody likes something, then you haven't gone far enough.
As a creative
and as creating something. And that I agree with because your reach isn't probably big enough if everybody agrees with something and you have not enough people. And I think we see that with our stuff too. Because sometimes when we put stuff out there that hits maybe, I don't know, 5,000 to 10,000 people, we can get everybody that agrees that they may agree with what we're saying. But everything that has, let's say, upwards of 20, 50, 100,000 views, all of that stuff is always very polarizing.
I agree.
Always.
I agree.
So from that aspect, I get it. But his second statement where he said something along the lines of the best work divides the audience.
Yeah, he talked to use picketing as an example or something like that.
Yeah, that is where I would agree with what Jay, and I think that's what Jay is speaking towards. That, I don't agree that the best work divides the audience. I just think that once you get enough eyes on something and enough people see something, you're going to find more outliers. But I don't think that... I think that's kind of, I don't know, I think it's kind of true across the board, because even though, I don't know, to an extent, I think that no matter what, you're going to have people, if there's something in the world that everybody knows about, there are going, it's just by rule of whatever, there's going to be a percentage that doesn't like.
I'll give you an example, right? So on the surface level, what you're talking about, I agree with. But from an extreme standpoint, or if we're talking about, we'll just say high level artists, elite artists, I think what Rick is talking about, Kanye fits in that mold, because he usually is a person that gets an A or B response to me at this point. It's like, it's either going to be like, we'll never find this dude that we loved, or it's like, I like the new wave and he's evolved and the kids like it and we'll go from there. Like, I think Kanye is polarizing every time he drops. And I think that might be what some of the stuff that he's kind of alluding to, because that's the one person that popped up in my mind. Kanye is always either this or this, no matter what stage of his career that you choose from. It's always going to be, it's either we don't like him because of XYZ and it's trash, or we love Kanye. I don't know if he's a great, I don't know if he's a gray area artist per se. Do y'all feel what I'm saying or no?
I get what you're saying, but I don't think that that is relatable, because then that would suggest that Kanye is making the best work.
And plus, his music doesn't exist in a vacuum. I know.
That's fair.
I know, because I'm just tired of the antics. I haven't listened to Kanye's new album.
Good point. Yeah, that's either. A good point, Lone. You talk about the best. I give you that. You're right.
And it could be really great. It could be something that pleases my musical palate. Right. But between all the crazy things he said about, you know, people of different religions, just the things everything. That he said about, you know,
I'm just thinking about from a reactionary standpoint. He's always one of those people that. It's extreme no matter what side it's on.
I think to what you're saying, that what you just said really kind of proves the opposite.
Okay.
In a way, because if Kanye can get that reaction, that polarizing reaction, no matter what he does, it doesn't speak to anything that he's doing. He's just a person that puts stuff out, and he's big enough, he's popular enough that it's going to have that reaction. I think what Rick is really speaking on is his popularity, realistically. Mm-hmm. I don't think he's really speaking about the merit of art. I think his second statement kind of contradicts his first statement. But, you know, because, again, I think there can be great art that 100 people like, and I think there can be great art that a million people like, and right. I think it's just popularity aspect. So it does. I don't think it necessarily means that you're not pushing hard enough or doing breaking the mold or anything. Not everything has to be polarizing to be... you know,
quote unquote, your best.
Yeah. Your best piece of work. You know? So that's just, I don't know. But, you know, the first statement, you know, I kind of agree with. But
yeah, I mean, it's the best part is one of those things where I think I can make something that I would qualify as some of my best work. And it just might be received a certain way. And if a lot of people like it, are you saying that's not my best work because it wasn't, you know, as polarizing as what he described? So,
but again, we could also make the argument that To Pimp a Butterfly might be Kendrick's best album. And that is extremely polarizing. Some people really enjoy it and some people don't. But I think that's just happenstance in a way. I don't think that that's directly relating to his point, you know. So I think that just happens to be the case in this particular thing because it is a jazz album and a lot of people don't want to hear the jazz stuff.
And it's funny that you said...
Or not jazz, but you know what I mean.
No, yeah. I know what you mean. And it's funny that you said that
it's because... It's his bitch's brew.
Yeah, it's out there, you know.
And I've had that conversation, and I always end up alone when I say that's probably my favorite record from him. But I also know I have roots in jazz and I love jazz, so maybe there's a bias. But I also believe that it was executed to perfection, and it's not perfect, but you know what I mean when I say that.
Not
like the way that it was put together and its sequence and all that. I'm like, no, this is brilliant. This is brilliant work.
And I've come from the school of thought that not everything that is created that is spectacular in art has to be consumed at the rate that on a repetitive level. You know what I mean? Like, To Pimp a Butterfly is a great piece of art. Just because I don't go to it as much as Section 80 doesn't mean that it's not as good as a piece of art.
Bingo.
It just means that Section 80 is more, it's easier to go to listen to.
Right.
To Pimp a Butterfly is an amazing piece of art that maybe you only need to listen to one time.
Yeah.
You know?
Or
you don't need to consume it in the same way.
Or it could be, you know, it's the difference between like Kendrick had, like Damn. Damn might be the record that I can play when I'm cleaning my crib up.
Right.
It's definitely that album.
To Pimp a Butterfly is the record I put on when I'm driving in Chicago.
Or
you know what I'm saying? Or when I'm, you know.
Think about something specific. Yeah.
But they both could be dope projects.
Yeah.
I think especially with To Pimp a Butterfly, that's the one where even somebody who considers themselves a Kendrick fan, where there might be an argument over it.
Right.
Where it's like, you know, and you could
Mr.
make.
Mr. Morale, too.
Yeah, definitely.
Mr. Morale.
Definitely
even more,
Mr. Morale. I know people that hate that record.
That's even more than To Pimp a Butterfly to me.
Yeah. I mean, 100%. With either of those records, you know, there are people who could break down. And I would respect their opinion if it from an artistic standpoint of why they hate those records.
Right.
You know, as far as Good Kid, Mad City, if you're somebody that says, I don't like this record, that's enough to make me want to fight you. I just don't understand how you do not like that record. That record, we talked about offline.
What'd you say, long?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like if you say right. I didn't, if you are someone who actually enjoys hip hop, quote unquote.
Quote unquote.
And you said, you know what I didn't feel? Good Kid, Mad City. I was like, did you listen to it? Like, because you're almost telling me you didn't listen to it.
Do you actually like hip hop music?
You know,
like, have you followed Kendrick? Did you?
It almost tells me that you have bad taste in music.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, when
there's
you say
things that you say,
it's where it's just like, universal.
Okay.
I'm like,
okay,
sorry.
I don't need to listen to you anymore.
Yeah, okay, like honestly, your opinion is null and void if you did not enjoy that album.
I think it just jumped out to me that,
and that album, to your point, so everything we're talking about, that album is not as polarizing as To Pimp a Butterfly,
not even
or
close.
Mr. Morale. But we would probably say that is his best piece of work, right?
Which one?
Good Kid, Mad City.
It's the one.
I mean, the most palatable to everybody.
If I talked to somebody who loves him and they broke down whether they didn't like Mr. Morale, I get it. Even To Pimp a Butterfly.
I get it,
too. But if you tried to give me a breakdown of why you didn't think Good Kid, Mad City was good, I'm sorry. But, like, that's just because you need to go listen to Wilson Phillips or whatever weird. I don't even know what you like as far as music is
concerned. If somebody has that as his best record, I won't get mad. I'm like, I'm talking about to the Good Kid, Mad City. Yeah. If somebody's like, "Yeah, that's Kendrick's dope best project," I'd be like, "All right."
Yeah, I guess what I'm saying is that it's not the most polarizing project that he's put out there. So to Rick's point, it contradicts what he's saying.
I see where you're going. I just thought because Rick is such a credible person, my ears kind of perked up when he talked about.
What did I say a few weeks ago? I was just like, you know, Rick says a lot of things that a lot of us say. He just has a beard. Yeah. You know, I mean,
it's
like,
just another one of those.
I think it is.
I mean, to a degree, like you listen to him talk and it's kind of like, oh, man, Rick Rubin's saying something. And it's not that he's not. There's definitely insight. There's definitely thought behind what he's saying. But kind of like sometimes you have to check yourself because you're like, OK, this is a guy with a beard. So I have to make sure that what he's saying is, you know what?
What Lone is telling me is, I think he's like, yo, like this topic, but I think you fell for the beard.
Not you specifically. I think a lot of people fall for the beard sometimes.
I ain't gonna hold you. Because we come from the era where.
And the no shoes and, you know.
You respect the other. Because we know you can go look it up what he's done. So it's just like, it hits a little different when he says certain stuff. But to your point, if he does his beard and it's off the wall, like it might.
And this is not to say that he's not thought provoking and he doesn't have great commentary and thoughts and stuff like that.
What he said caught my attention for sure. Yeah. Like the way he worded it. So, we were able to at least discuss it. So shout out to Uncle Rick, you know, and maybe he'll have another bearded conversation that we use down the road, perhaps.
Yep.
All right, man. Anything else that you gentlemen want to say before we get out of here? Shout out to the chat, by the way. Y'all stuck around with us. We appreciate it. Any curse words or anything, Jay Moore, that you want to?
Shout out to Marv Albert.
All right. NewOldHeads.com for all the education you need this year, as always. If you see it, like it, subscribe, hit a bell, do the notifications. And also remember, on iTunes or anything that allows you to do a rating, give us 5 stars and please leave a comment. It only helps us moving forward. And shout out to that Patreon as well. That's where you can get this ignorant content uncensored. We got $3 options. just, you know, rock with your people. We appreciate y'all, and we need those comments as well. So please gas us up, because we know y'all support us. All right, we'll see y'all next week. Peace.
Yep.
Bye.